whether it's the fault of the corporate or the fault of the startup founders, you just have to be transparent with each other. If it cannot be done, if you need a little bit more time, if you need a little bit more help even, it's always good to voice it out, because at the end of the day, you're going for a long-term partnership.
Hey folks, it's Yaniv, and you're listening to the School of Innovation podcast. My guest this week is Joyce Tai. Joyce is the Chief Strategy Officer at StartupX, an innovation, venture, and startup enabler based in Singapore. She was formerly the program head for Block 71 Singapore and Indonesia, and prior to that, she did a bunch of things like kickstarting a few startups, being part of Singapore's national broadcaster's first venture builder, and launching a digital venture for a financial institution. Finally, in 2018, Joyce launched StartupX with her partners following a decade of growing one of the largest startup communities in Southeast Asia. She has developed and launched accelerators in the sustainability, arts, and impact space across Southeast Asia, including HyperX, the world's first sustainability hackcelerator, co-developed with Temasek. Here's Joyce Tai.
Welcome back to school. I'm so happy to have you.
Thank you so much, Jenny. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
What I wanted to do was maybe start kind of talking about your journey, because you've done a lot of things that I think are leading or led to what you do today. So today, you're the Chief Strategy Officer at StartupX, but before that, you kind of had a few roles that I think built up to that. So, you know, you did a couple of things in marketing and community, but then got into entrepreneurship. You're a founder. You headed programs for Block 71 in Singapore and Indonesia as well. And you were the director of Startup Weekend in Singapore. Is that right?
Yeah, that if you're reading out my history to me, it sounds like I've done a lot of things. I think I've been lucky to be on different sides of the table. So I did start my career in marketing, working for a financial institution. And I then went on to, and then I think, you know, you have that bug, that itch that you need to scratch after working a few years in corporate. I was a founder a few times. Some did okay, some failed. It was all good experience. I was also part of a venture builder for a media company. So that was the first time that I really got to work with a corporate in a innovation capacity. And I also started to see that, hey, you know, within the startups and within corporates, things are very different. I also set up a digital venture for a corporate, for a financial institution. That was a good, I think, eye-opener to be sort of like a startup offshoot for a corporate, and you really start to see the inner workings and how sometimes regulations or just hierarchies or bureaucracies kind of make things a little bit difficult for a corporate to move very nimbly. And you mentioned Block 71, so that was I think a really good time. I was running the incubator for Block 71 in Indonesia. During my time, we got to launch two more locations so besides Jakarta, we got to launch Bandung and Yogyakarta. So being able to sort of expand that reach and get to know a lot more startups locally and get to work with them. So that was really interesting because Indonesia and Singapore were very near to each other, which is an hour by boat ride away, but just the culture, the environment is just so different for startups operating in these two countries. And right now I'm at StartupX. Through all of this, I was running Startup Weekend, like you mentioned, and that's a community-led nonprofit initiative where we're really encouraging people to come together and build a startup over a weekend. So a lot of history back there, but right now I'm at StartupX. I look after our startup programs. I look after our venture building programs. I'm having the time of my life right now. So very, very happy to be where I am right now.
That's fantastic. How do you think those different roles, if you could reflect for a moment about the things that you've done, how do you think those roles kind of shaped, you know, who you are and like what you do today?
Maybe starting as a founder first. I think I've got to go through, when I did my first startup, I made all the mistakes that you could possibly make as a startup founder, spending on the wrong things, focusing on the wrong priorities, and so on and so forth. So going through all of those founder experiences each time, working with different co-founders, it kind of helped me build up that mental state that as a founder, you're always hustling, you're always trying to be resourceful to get things done on a very shoestring budget, but you want to get the best results out of everything. And you bring that in into a corporate environment. And I'm lucky to have come from a corporate environment where I see how, you know, sometimes processes or operations can be that roadblock. You don't need a lot of innovation to sort of unblock those knots. And being able to have both the startup and corporate perspective and seeing how to gel these two together. You know, corporate taught me a lot about I think sometimes even people management, because you're sometimes in a corporate environment, it can be like in a minefield. You're working with so many different personalities, so many different project leaders, and you still got to get things going your way. And both of those experiences, I think, have taught me a lot more things about how to navigate working with a corporate and working with a startup and even trying to bring the two together. Most of all, I think some of these experiences have really, where I come from is you know, running Startup Weekend as a community, coming with a community first mindset. I think something that's very ingrained in me is that you always have to give out your help first. So Startup Weekend, globally, we are under Techstars, and Techstars has a give first mentality. So I think along with all the other community leaders that I've worked with across the world, trying to build up startup communities, we always understand the principle of trying to give first, trying to give first to our community, trying to help them, help our startups, in any capacity that we can, trying to deliver value to our partners first before we even talk about money. I think that's a very important thing, because then I think it helps the entire ecosystem to grow a little bit more and to be a lot kinder to each other.
How would you define a community?
So that's a very good question. I actually did a panel, I think a couple of months back, where we're talking about managing communities in a virtual environment like right now. I think what really brings a community together is that they see that there is solidarity within that community, a group of people that they can tap on, that they can go to for mental support, for physical support. It's a community that is trying to drive a cause, and you believe in that cause and want to be a part of that movement. And that's what we try to do at Startup Weekend as well. We really try to make sure that the people who are new to our community or who have been in the community for a long time still get value from being a part of that community, and that they come back and contribute and help the newer people over time.
What's the startup community like in Singapore? I've only been to Singapore once, and it was for less than 24 hours. I literally came in, gave a workshop, and left. But it seemed like it was for the startup community, and it seemed like a very tight-knit community. What's your take on that? And perhaps let's start to kind of rope in Startup X into that. What's the role that Startup X plays in that community?
So that's a good question. I think Singapore, we're not known for being big. So the community here is definitely, I think, tight. After a while, you get to know almost everyone in the community. It's not hard to get to know people. It's very obvious when someone moves on from another role as well, just because word gets around very quickly. And I think that's the magic of it. But what it also means is that sometimes it can be hard to grow because there isn't really a market here. If you are a startup founder trying to build a company here, you would think of Singapore as a first market, but not as a market where you can do anything and everything, because it's not in Asia, for example. It's not Japan, for example, where they're self-serving communities and they can, as a startup founder, you can pretty much start something and grow a lot. You, as a startup founder here, you need to really get out of Singapore. But people think of Singapore as a first starting point. I think people say we're lucky because we have a lot of government support. We have grants to help you get started, which helps make that first step much easier. There's a lot of great intentions from the government, but I think as with many other countries, it's not always well administered. It's just typical government stuff, same everywhere else. Universities here are actively encouraging students to get a taste of startup life. National University of Singapore sends students out to the different startup capitals all around the world to really get into that grind and to understand how startups operate from all around the world, and they bring that experience back with them and they go on to start companies. And I think that's a fantastic culture that the universities have been able to build. And now other institutions are also starting to follow suit by sending out their students as well. And so I think over the last 10, 15 years, Singapore has been able to really push people to consider startup as a viable career option. And I say that because for so many years, as we were growing up as kids, our parents talk about having an iron rice bowl, about making sure that you have a stable job, go work in government, go work in a large corporate, that most people never consider entrepreneurship as an option. Now it's a very different mentality. People want to start startups. People think it's cool to start startups. And that's nice, but I think Singapore is just not a capital where you can, you know, just build a startup here, be based here, and do something here forever. You always have to think here as a launch pad to get out to somewhere else. And I think at Startup X, what we try to do is when we work with startups, we really try to get them to think of a global first mindset. So to not just think of Singapore or the Singapore economy as your sole, I would say, customer, but to really build for much larger audience across the entire world.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, as you're describing what's happening in Singapore, it almost sounds like Israel. Like I was thinking, that's exactly us. That's exactly the ecosystem. In Israel, a tiny country, you know, you can cross it in a few hours. There's not really a market here. Every startup is global first in mindset. And even the part about, like, you know, parents wanting their kids to be doctors, lawyers, you know, not necessarily, I was going to say bankers, but not bankers. But it sounds so similar to Israel. So let's get back to talking about corporate startup relationships, because you've played different roles through your career as a founder, entrepreneur, but then also in corporates. And that kind of positioned you to be exactly in that right place, to sort of the in-between place between entrepreneurships and startups and corporate, kind of the organizational mindset. I'm curious, what's the most misunderstood thing about corporate startup relationships from your experience?
So I think we're very lucky for Startup X to be that node or to be that bridge between the startups and the corporates. And we hear from both sides. We see so much misunderstanding about both sides. But I think what's the biggest thing from someone looking outside in is that a lot of there has been a lot of people who talk about the fact that it's impossible for corporates and startups to ever collaborate. I think it's more of the fact that you just need to educate both parties to help them understand that they're not each other and they can't expect each other to behave in the same way. I remember this video of this VC on Facebook. It was trending, and he was basically saying that it's you know, as a startup, you should never ever join a corporate accelerator, because the corporates just don't have an interest or vested interest in helping you. And any startup founder that tries to be a part of a corporate accelerator, it's just wishful thinking. I think it's a very lazy way or a very sweeping statement to say that it'll always be like this, because I've seen cases where it's actually successful. And I'll be honest, it's not a lot of success stories. It's not always rosy. We do have our fair share of frustrations working with our corporate partners and our startups sometimes. But I think it's about helping both sides to reach that equilibrium state. So I think the biggest misunderstood thing is that people think it's impossible, but I don't think so, and I don't agree so. I think it will take some time, definitely. We're not at that perfect state right now, but we will get there.
Yeah, I think it's interesting what you said about, you know, the kind of blame that sort of falls on one side when in fact it takes two to tango, right?
Definitely. I think both sides have their fair share of, you know, work cut out for them. As a startup founder, you can't expect the corporate to bend everything over, you know, to your will. They do have a business to run. And they do have processes in place that's put in place because of the fact that they are a large organization. One of the common refrains that I hear is corporates talking about startups not being ready, not being enterprise ready. But the truth is they were just starting out not so long ago, whereas you have maybe 50, 100 years of history. And it's hard to expect them to operate in the same way as you or to have the same kind of processes put in place as you do, which is why I think, you know, it's about just managing the expectations of both ends and helping them to understand what do they really want from each other, and is that a realistic or an unrealistic expectation. We have to manage the attitudes between the parties, which is why I think often, you know, when you talk about corporate startup partnerships, it's a lot about relationship management. Because as long as you can get both sides to see where each other is coming from, it usually gets a lot easier from there.
Yes, I think you said something that is key. Aligning or managing expectations is so, so, so important. I think that as corporates, you know, and this has been a trend over the last couple of years, have been more and more into relationships or building relationships or working with startups, they also realize that it's not kind of a point and shoot type of situation. It's really a lot of hard work understanding where the startup is coming from. And the same applies from the startup perspective, where corporates are not like this rich uncle, right, who just has a bunch of a stack of dollars in their pockets and is just waiting there to help you grow. It's a lot about managing expectations. I think that's key.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's usually a fair bit of frustration at the beginning, but once you are able to help them see that, hey, you're not aiming for something impossible, you're starting the small steps and trying to get there, then you can get both sides to lower their defenses, and to start seeing how can we effectively work with one another. Often, I've seen, you know, where attitudes coming in are like, they'll never be able to do what we want them to do. And if you start with that mindset, and you come into this partnership being unreasonable, it doesn't work for both sides. And it's not going to work out in any form of effective partnership. So the first I think is always just to make sure that you manage both the attitudes and the expectations, and then you can start from there.
Yeah. Is it a sprint or a marathon in your mind?
I think it's a marathon. It's a marathon because mindset change takes a bit of time. It's not always a case of, hey, you know, as long as I tell you something, you'll get there. It takes both sides to sort of figure each other out, to see what's possible. And sometimes it may be that there is nothing tangible even after you have that discussion. And you're both well aware that you like each other, but there's nothing that you can really work on right now. But you keep that relationship, and you know, 6 months down the road, 1 year down the road, someone might be a little bit more ready, and you find new opportunities. But you've got to keep that fire burning. And even I think applying it to, you know, many of the corporate partners that we've worked with over the years, we also tell them that you can't run one run of a corporate accelerator and expect immediate results straight away. It takes a little bit of time for the startup community to warm up to you, to warm up to the idea that the corporate is doing something and wants to get in touch with the startup community, or wants to get in touch with startup founders and to potentially adopt their solutions. And it's not, you know, it's not a one day where you can get everything together. Sometimes the corporates also needs a little bit of time to make sure that they have the processes set up. There is somebody in the company who can champion that working relationship with the startups. It takes time to get there. So I think it's a bit of a marathon.
Yeah, I agree. Let's try to give our listeners kind of a glimpse of what corporate startup relationship looks like, maybe through the perspective of Startup X. How does it work for you guys? Do you have a blueprint? Is there a process in place for doing that?
Yeah, so I think where we usually first start is with the corporates. Because I think because they are the paymasters, that's the truth. And they are the ones who come to us and say, hey, you know, hey, Joyce, or hey, Startup X, we want to work with startups. And that's where we stop them and say, why do you want to work with startups? Is it more of a vanity thing? Is it because you're looking at competitors and saying, hey, my competitors are working with startups, we better do something? Or is there a real need behind that where you're thinking, we do have actual challenges, we feel that working with startups can potentially help solve some of these challenges, so on and so forth. So establishing that first objective. It's fine if someone comes to us and say, hey, we just want to do it because we want to be seen as being friendly to startups, but we don't necessarily want to work with the startups at the end of the day. And that's fine. It's also okay if someone comes to us and say, we're not interested in nurturing a startup. We just want to find good companies that we can invest in. And that's also okay. But knowing that objective and being able to help the company clarify that objective helps make the rest of the conversation a lot easier afterwards, because we don't find the wrong companies or we don't identify or scout the wrong founders. We're very clear about what the objective is, both between the corporates and us. So when we go out and do that search and when we scout for companies or startups that we want to bring in to work with them, we're a lot more clearer about the purpose, and we can communicate that to the startup founders as well, so they know what they're in it for. So I would say that's always the first step. The second step then is managing, you know, the expectations for both sides, and helping each other to understand that the end goal is something that may look very different from other corporate startup partnerships that they may have been a part of or they may have seen in the ecosystem. Ultimately, they need to arrive at what they think is an appropriate goal for themselves. And it's okay if it's an incremental goal, because you don't always have to aim, you know, for the stars. You're just trying to get something going. You're trying to get quick wins, because often the corporates have to go back to management and prove to them that this is something viable, this is something worth doing. And so that's, I think, the starting point. And then when you actually get down to identifying the founders and bringing them in, often we try to get very hands-on in there. We try to remind each other that they're not, you know, they're not each other, and they have to think about their own factors. They have to think about their respective manpower. They have to think about their respective processes. They have to think about what's possible and what's not possible, and to be able to communicate that upfront. Because when you try to get each other to start working, being as transparent as possible helps that relationship or helps that partnership to go a lot more smoother. So we sometimes think of ourselves as mediators, because we're also trying to make sure that both sides have are able to put things on the table and are able to see value in working with each other. So I think, I don't know if that's our blueprint, but I think that's what we see as important. Every time we approach a corporate and startup partnership, and we feel that starting point is really where we are able to iron it out, everything else becomes a lot easier after that.
That's incredible. I think that's one of the most succinct ways I've ever heard anyone describe the process. So I want to repeat some of the things that you said. So you start with why, you know, like challenging the rationale, the reason behind corporate startup relationship, on essentially beginning from the corporate. And that's where you also align expectations and mindsets and things like that. You go for good enough or quick wins, low hanging fruit, to get momentum, build traction. And this is something that I haven't heard yet, which is understanding the limitations. So looking also at what's not going to work or what might not work, as sort of the, you know, sort of the opposite to just for being super optimistic and going off the cliff, essentially. And then focusing on delivery, right? Just high quality people within the relationship, the right startup, the right corporate, the right project, that sort of thing.
Yeah. I you know, the part about limitations, because I just had this conversation earlier with one of my partners where they were frustrated about the fact that one of the startups had overpromised. And I think it's something that founders tend to do, because you want to get that contract in. And so they overpromise, and they thought, you know, we'll try and rush everything out for you. And I would strongly recommend not doing that. I think whether it's the fault of the corporate or the fault of the startup founders, you just have to be transparent with each other. If it cannot be done, if you need a little bit more time, if you need a little bit more help, even, it's always good to voice it out, because at the end of the day, you're going for a long-term partnership. And you're trying to build that over a very long period of time. And if you don't be transparent with each other from the beginning, it gets harder afterwards.
Does Startup X have, you know, a secret sauce or what you would call an unfair advantage when it comes to corporate startup relationships?
Maybe the fact that we started from building a community first. We are maybe one of the few operators here in Singapore who actually have built up a really big startup community. It's one of the largest startup communities here in Singapore. We have a very good pulse on what's happening, on what people want to work on what people actually, you know, are interested in, what issues are plaguing them. And those are good data and good information that our corporate partners want access to. And so I would say that community first approach is what, you know, has helped us a lot in the earlier years when we were first building up Startup X. The fact that people think we have a very valuable community to tap onto and to leverage on. Over the years, I would say, you know, I don't know whether it's still an unfair advantage, but we're always at the back of our mind remembering that we have a community that we're trying to grow. And in a lot of the things that we do, we don't forget that the community was always there for us first. The second thing, I think, maybe not so much of a secret sauce, but it's just more of our approach to things. We're very committed to delivering quality results, not just results, but not just ticking the check boxes to say, hey, you know, we fulfilled this. But really what we want is that our startups, our corporate partners, we want them to walk away from the partnership better than before, a hell lot better than before, because we understand that if I deliver that value to you and you can clearly see that value, and you can see that I'm serious about helping you and serious about helping you to get better at this, serious about helping you with your innovation journey, you'll come back and work with me again. We're not in it for, you know, a one-off contract where, you know, I do my bare minimum, you get the results to show your bosses, and that's about it. We really want to deliver quality results because we believe that the ecosystem will be better off because of it.
I think it's interesting that you said community. So you said community and quality and delivery, or even over delivering. And I want to try and connect those two things, because community for me is sometimes, or could sometimes be, a double-edged sword. So in a way, yes, a good, large, strong community, right, contributes to corporate startup relationships. But on the other end, you've got to maintain that quality. You talked a little bit about quality. So because if you have just a large community and you don't maintain the quality, it kind of works against you. So I'm curious if you guys have any way of maintaining that quality within the community as it grows.
I think you raise a very good point. I think because we came from a community first, we constantly think how we can make it better. Because we came from there first, we constantly think of it as our baby. And because it's a first child, you never want to let go of that community, and you want to make sure that the community grows along with you, because to us, that's a bit of our unfair advantage. Anytime that we lose touch of that community, we're the same as any other player. I think one of the, as you're trying to maybe bridge both sides, one of the things is people know that we are Grounds Up Movement. People know that we build up one of the largest startup communities in Southeast Asia as a bunch of volunteers, because Startup Weekend Singapore is completely volunteer-led, non-profit. And often we think that to show people that, hey, you know, if a bunch of volunteers can achieve so much, just imagine what we would do for you if we actually manage your innovation journey for you as an operator. And people get it. People understand that, you know, there's firepower in there. and you know, if we're not getting paid and we're doing so much for the community, you can bet your last dollar that I'll do a lot for you, a hell of more for you, if you're paying me to manage your innovation for you, because now I have resources at my disposal, I have budget at my disposal, and I'm committed to helping you achieve so much better, because I want to make sure that you come back and work with me afterwards.
Fantastic. Key insights about, you know, investing in and back in the community, staying in touch, being very generous. I think that's kind of the word I was looking for, being very generous. It's not just about it's not a transactional kind of relationship. There's an emotional connection there. And, you know, also the feeling that we're all working towards something that's bigger than ourselves, right? It's bigger than Startup X. It's bigger than your corporate. It's bigger than your startup. I think those are a few of the key insights that you mentioned. I want to, because you're based in Singapore, I want to understand if there's anything different about how, you know, Singapore or Southeast Asia tackles startup corporate relationships, something that maybe you guys do differently or need to do differently than the rest of the world.
in Southeast Asia, not necessarily within Singapore, there are many conglomerates around Southeast Asia, for example, in Thailand, in Vietnam, in Indonesia. These are high concentration of conglomerates that is running or contributing effectively to the economy in these countries. And that also means that quite a number of these conglomerates, sometimes they dictate how the startup ecosystem is like in those countries. And I think it's also a double-edged sword. I have heard of cases where conglomerates overvalue their brand. And so they go to a startup, they say, I'm interested in you, I want to invest in you. I want to invest, say, $500,000 for 80% of your company. And it's a ridiculous valuation, but they do it because they say, I'm a conglomerate, I have, you know, power, I control a huge part of the economy, and you'll do well by aligning your startup with me. And it doesn't help the ecosystem in that way, because what you're trying to do is just to buy over the company. It's a nicer term when you say, I try to invest in you with a low amount for a huge amount of equity. But effectively what you're doing is really just cutting off the founders. And that's not a good way to support startups in that ecosystem, because I've seen so many examples of startups just selling out, just saying, okay, a conglomerate is willing to put in money for me, I'm happy. Because you also need to look at Southeast Asia and understand that for so many of these people, sometimes they're just living barely above the poverty line, and the fact that they can build a company and a conglomerate is willing to put in money for them, that's a way out. And I see so many people just saying, okay, I'll take the first dollar that comes my way. In Singapore, we don't see as much of that. We don't have that many conglomerates here. But I think across Asia, it's still a lot more nascent than in the West. Singapore maybe has maybe a little bit more mature ecosystem as compared to the rest of our peers in Southeast Asia. But generally across Asia, I think people or companies need to understand that you're not looking for quick wins. You're really looking to grow the ecosystem. You're really looking to be in it for the long run, and not just try and cut short a startup's journey with cash. It's a hard, I think, principle to understand, because just all across Asia, it's always been quite cutthroat in business. You just try and take over or acquire your competitors or simply buy over. That principle of how Silicon Valley works, about how investors are putting in money to groom the founders and the entrepreneurs, that principle is kind of lost on them sometimes. But where I see hope is that a lot of second generation, maybe second gen conglomerate kids are coming out and saying, hey, I want to do something. And I'm not just thinking about growing our company to be the largest in Asia, but we're also thinking about our impact on society as a general. And these are the ones that's coming out and saying, hey, we can do something. We can help support the next generation of entrepreneurs. We can use our money to actually do good. And I think slowly, as you see more and more of these people come up, Southeast Asia will be very interesting, because there's still a lot of unserved communities here. There's still a lot of potential here. And now that attitudes are slowly changing, I think this region is going to be a lot more exciting in the coming years.
Joyce, with that hopeful outlook, where can people learn more about StartupX?
Yes, so visit us at www.thestartupx.com. You can find me on LinkedIn. I'm happy to connect with anyone and have a chat over time. If there's anything that you find interesting about what I said earlier on, happy to have a coffee and debate it with you.
Wonderful, wonderful. So I'm going to put all of those links in the show notes. Joyce, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much, Jenny. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it. It's been a wonderful chat. Thank you.